I'm an exchange alumnus.
I'm an exchange alumna.
I'm an exchange alumna.
I'm an exchange alumnus.
I am an exchange alumna.
I'm an exchange alumna.
People, places, and international exchange. Voices of Exchange delivers unforgettable first-person stories from people transformed by international exchange. These exchange alumni share stories of growth, unexpected friendship, and career inspiration from all around the world.
We are
the Voices of Exchange.
When we protect our environment, we also end up protecting ourselves. So whether that's clean air or clean water or a clean environment, those are all related to the state of our health and the state of our well-being and our physical health as well.
On this week's episode, we dive in with Anna Aposa, co-founder, director, and chief mermaid of Save Philippine Seas. We learn how she's working to mobilize citizens to protect marine and coastal lands on a local and global scale. Anna's story takes us from the Philippines to Boston, Durham, and places in between. Join us as we hear her journey from wanting to be a Broadway star to becoming a champion for the environment.
Hi, I'm Anna Aposa. I am the co-founder and executive director and chief mermaid of an organization called Save Philippine Seas that was created as a response to a major illegal wildlife trade case that happened. At that time, I had just submitted my thesis for my undergraduate degree and I was looking for a job and I had a lot of free time to, you know, comb social media. I always say that my advocacy was built on the foundation of my English language education and my English studies education, because I think when you are an English major, you're trained to read a lot, you're trained to listen to the way people use language, and I was taught by my teachers to ask like the right questions and the good questions, which I feel are things, you know, they're life lessons that help me every day. I grew up wanting to be a Broadway star. That's what I thought I was going to be. And ever since I was maybe 11 years old or 12, I was in voice lessons and I spent summers being immersed in musical theater workshops and dance workshops and teaching musical theater. So that's another part of my background that was really formative for developing discipline. So sometimes people ask me, you know, what do you do when you're not motivated to like work on saving the seas? And I always say, it's not about motivation. Sometimes it's about discipline, right? So it's like getting up and putting in the work, whether you feel inspired or not, which I think being both an English major and a theater actor taught me. So my dad is an environmental lawyer. He actually started environmental law in the Philippines. So ever since I was young, I was really exposed to a lot of environmental issues, not just fishing, you know, not just like illegal fishing issues or marine conservation issues, but even like reforestation projects and illegal logging and different kinds of environmental injustices. So I always joke that my environmental law degree came from the dinner table, because our everyday conversations with my family would be about politics and environmental laws and issues like current events. So it's always been there. And I actually deliberately did not want to pursue environmental law because I didn't want people to think that I was just where I was because of my last name or because of my connection. So I really resisted it. And I think even when Save Philippine Seas already started, I was still very hesitant to think that it would be my path, my chosen career. So in 2016, I participated in an exchange program in the US, and it was on oceans. And I was selected as a mentor or a facilitator for a youth program. And I enjoyed it so much. So it was a some Southeast Asian and East Asian students, and I would be their mentor, not just to teach them about the oceans and answer other questions about the sea, but also help them adjust to culture shock in the US. So a lot of the students that were there had never been outside of their hometowns. So obviously there's some culture shock. And I remember one of my Filipino students, and when we ate spaghetti for the first time. So for context, in the Philippines, spaghetti is very sweet. Like there's a lot of sugar and there's a lot of hot dogs. It's very strange. I know it sounds strange, but it's really good. And she was so confused why the spaghetti didn't have hot dogs and why it was a little bit sour and salty. So those are other things that I wasn't really expecting to have to explain. And it was also a lot for a lot of us, for a lot of the students, it was their first time to see snow. So that was also a really exciting, part of the program. But on a personal level, we got exposed to so many different programs in the US. We got to travel to like aquariums and speak with environmental educators. And that really left a big impression on me, and I still actually continue applying the lessons that I learned during that exchange program to this day. So I actually lived in the US when I was younger. My dad did his master's in Harvard, so my family lived there for, we lived in Cambridge for a year when I was about 8 years old, and then I went back in 2004 for a creative writing program in Pratt Institute in New York. And then I did a fellowship in Duke University after my master's. So I had been to the US several times. Being in the US and specific to the program that I was part of under the State Department, one of the, I don't remember exactly where we were, but I remember what the topic was about. The speaker was talking about this concept called science cafes. And she said, the point of the science cafe is to make science more engaging and more approachable. So that left a big impression on me. And I was asking myself, how do we bring science to closer to, you know, people who are not, you know, studying marine biology or... And we decided, with another YCD alum actually, to create what we call conservation workshops, so communicating for conservation in a brewery. And I think that experience was something that planted a seed in my mind to do something like that in the future. You know, before pre-pandemic, we used to travel all over the Philippines holding workshops, working with communities closely in a physical face-to-face setting. And now we're developing what we call earth education kits. So it's, you know, education for the earth. And we're working with teachers, we're working with students, we're working with the Department of Education in the Philippines to create these learning kits. So that's also a little seed that was planted in my mind back in 2016. What I'm thinking about now is, if we can't bring people to the sea, then how do we bring the sea to them? You know, when you're 8, you don't really have a grasp of how things affect you so much, you know? So I remember it was my first time in the States. I was 8, coming from a tropical country and suddenly having 4 seasons. I mean, that is like, it's still so clear to me the first time I ever saw snow. It's like one of my core memories. But it's also like little things like eating TV dinners and like doing my own chores and then watching Nickelodeon all day, because we didn't have Nickelodeon in the Philippines back then. And of course, as an 8-year-old, these are things that you get super excited about. It was also hard to learn to speak English the whole time, because in the Philippines, we mix English and Filipino a lot when we converse, we code switch a lot. But there, obviously, I couldn't. So I had to train myself to speak in straight English, which, you know, can actually get really tiring. And I feel like I had to grow up quickly. And I remember there was even a time I started crying because I just felt like, oh my God, how can people know? How can people have figured this out? And like, you know, I do well in school, but in like real life, it's hard. And then the pace of the education was also different. And what I valued in that creative writing space was how much the class put value on like poetry and fiction and nonfiction and the creative space, which I felt like, you know, in the Philippines, we are always conditioned that you have to be a lawyer, you have to be a doctor. And because I got good grades, you know, people always assumed that I would go down those paths. And I think that course really influenced me to major in English, much to the disappointment of my parents. But, you know, it was just another reality that, oh, there are other choices. There are other career paths that I can take. Sometimes you get scared to ask questions because you feel like people will think you're stupid. So I remember being in the like the laundry room in the school, and I'd never used the washing machine before. So I remember being there and just standing with my laundry, and someone went up to me and was like, "Are you okay?" And I said, "I don't know how to use a washing machine." And she was like, "How can you not know?" So that I felt like, oh my God, I shouldn't be asking people these things. I'm supposed to know these things. So when I had my opportunity to mentor these young students who are going to the US for the first time, I just always reminded them that you can ask me anything. There are no stupid questions. Whatever it is that you're thinking, just let me know. You know, if you're shy to ask it in the group, then you can ask me during the break, you know, things like that. I don't think I can run out of challenges. But there are, of course, like the organizational ones, which, you know, if you're running a nonprofit, then you're always going to be financially unstable, I guess, because as a nonprofit, you kind of have to keep raising funds. And I've been very fortunate to have the US government support our work in the last maybe 6-7 years already. So that's been a huge part of being able to sustain our organization and the work that we're doing. And still, it's hard to advocate for the seas when there are bigger or, I guess, more urgent issues like health and, you know, our economic situation. So it's kind of been pushed a little bit lower compared to the other development issues.
Yeah.
And protect our environment, we also end up protecting ourselves. So whether that's clean air or clean water or a clean environment, those are all related to the state of our health and the state of our well-being and our physical health as well. In 2021, I think it's particularly challenging because of the pandemic and how it's so hard to advocate for, let's say, you know, reducing plastic pollution when so many of the things now are dependent on it being single use. So I've seen a lot of face shields, you know, being blown into the streets and in the coastal areas. So the medical waste is part of it, but also being on lockdown means increase in e-commerce activity. So we have to order a lot of our food, household essentials, our daily essentials online, which, you know, my friend was just talking about how there's inception of e-commerce packaging because like the plastic is wrapped in another plastic, which is wrapped in a bubble wrap, which is wrapped in a paper bag, and which is wrapped in another plastic. So that's another challenge that we're facing. I've always been a very like internally motivated person, I guess. And there are days that I really don't want to work, or I don't feel like what I'm doing is actually going to result in something. But what motivates me is knowing that there are different ways that I like give myself a pep talk. So on some days it's like, you have a deadline. You can't miss this deadline. So for practical reasons, you have to get up and work. Even if it's just for 2 hours, just start. I always have to remind myself, okay, I'm doing this so that I can, you know, work with young people or work with fisher folks or work on shark conservation. So it's just finding what inspires me or what can motivate me on that day. And sometimes it's not always the same pep talk. If you don't know something, you can't love it. And that kind of approach has made me a big advocate for what we call experiential learning. So for example, in our programs, we learned that 80 to 90% of the students that we work with have never been in the water. And for me, that's very strange, knowing that we're the second largest archipelago in the world. Why are we so scared of being in the water? Why are we so scared of what lies beneath? So in every program that we did pre-pandemic, we would always make time and allocate resources to bring people into the water. Because it's one thing to watch, you know, documentaries and see photos, but it's completely different when you're there and you feel this sense of connection and this kinship with the environment. Growing up, we've always been snorkeling and we've always been, you know, going to beach trips as a family. But going underwater, I was 15 and I still remember. And I remember I didn't even want to go scuba diving because I just wanted, it was summer and I was always so busy with theater. And I didn't want to take a week out of theater. But there was this window and my dad said, okay, go. And I was just so blown away by, it sounds silly now that I'm talking about it, but I was like, oh my God, there's so many fish. There's so many colors underwater. And I was thinking, oh my God, if I were an artist, I wish I could draw or I could paint and like make people see what I'm seeing and make people feel this excitement and this sense of wonder that I'm feeling. I've done maybe, I would say, let's say over 400 dives in different parts of the Philippines and in some parts of other parts of the world. And it still brings me so much life. Like I still get so excited as if I was that 15-year-old being in the water for the first time, because no two dives are ever alike. You know, even if you go to the same spot and you dive on the same day, same time, it's just always going to be different. And I think that's part of the thrill of it. My story of Achieve Mermaid, we had a volunteer who said, you know, why don't we come up with business cards so that people take us seriously? This was like, you know, a few months into, say, Philippine Seas. And I said, oh my God, that's a great idea. And then she said, okay, I'll design it. What title do you want? And I said, Chief Mermaid. And she said, you're joking, right? And I was like, no, I mean, others have chief executive officers and chief finance officers. Why can't I be the Chief Mermaid? Anyway, it's just for fun. So I printed it on my business card. And so I would give it to people. And one time I was giving a talk in a university and someone got my card, and it turns out that person was from the government. And then a few days later, I got a letter with a letterhead of the Department of Environment and Natural Resources. And the letter said, you know, Ana Oposa, co-founder and Chief Mermaid. And I was like, oh my God, people are taking it seriously. And then I tried to like rebrand myself and drop the Chief Mermaid, but then people love it and people still call me Chief Mermaid when I walk into the door. Oh, the Chief Mermaid is here, or the Chief is here. So I guess I can't run away from it.
We'd like to thank Ana for sharing her story with us. For more on Ana and the amazing work she and her team are doing, visit savephilippineseas.org. Again, that's savephilippineseas.org. Also, a special thank you to you, our audience, for helping us reach nearly 2,000 downloads. If you haven't done it yet, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to tell your friends about your new favorite podcast, Voices of Exchange. On that note, that's it from us today. And as I would say in Korean, 감사합니다, 다음에 봬요, which means thank you. See you next time.